Why should you visit thechairshot.com?
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Somebody screwed with my reaction thing song. There it is. Hi, everybody.
Y'all get the guns, the drugs, for my generation, I'll take the fall. The state, and across the nation, and it's a sin. The guns, the freaks, the fraud, the measure with me. Come on, come on, come on, let's get it out.
You know, those old school Raw theme songs take on a whole new meaning now that I'm actually going back and watching them. Good evening, everybody, and welcome into the Raw Reaction. It is June the 4th, 2018. We are live on the Chair Shot Radio Network once again. My name is Harry Broadhurst. I am your host. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Hi.
What's going on, Tony?
Living the life.
You're having headset troubles already. This is going to be a fun episode.
Oh, yay.
And the third man, Andrew Ballas.
Woo, the Capitals win. They're one game away. Yeah.
Overrated.
Yeah, you have a weird way of saying great eight. I'm sorry.
Also, Tom Wilson's a pussy, and I hope somebody knocks him square on his fucking ass. Anywho.
Uh-huh.
Tonight's episode of the show is taking us once again one step closer to Money in the Bank on June 17th. We have one more episode of The Reaction. That will be next week's episode. We will do our predictions for the show, and there's going to be a lot of predictions to do since it's a five-hour fucking show. And then the following week, Andrew and Tony will be here with the breakdown of what happened at Money in the Bank, because that's my anniversary, and frankly, my girlfriend would have my ass.
Well, the
Uno, what did you do? What was that? Wait, Tony, Andrew cut you off.
The hope is that she does have your ass.
See, we were
so
on the same page.
The same
there we go.
Andrew,
it's nice.
Yep. Classy, both of you. Anywho, so what do you say we go ahead and get into this week's episode of the show here? Overall, I thought a marked improvement from last week's episode, although let's be honest, after the show we got last week, not saying a whole lot.
Yeah.
Sure.
Our opening segment features Elias already in the ring with dimmed lights to talk about destroying Seth Rollins with the guitar El Kabang last week on Raw. Seth Rollins comes out to refute this sentiment, and we get the old Mexican standoff in Texas, guitar versus chair, until Jinder Mahal sways things into Elias' favor. Roman Reigns returns to the show, yay, and makes the save for Seth. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out that it is the Teddy Long special tag match player to open up the show. The opening contest sees that tag match, and Elias and Jinder Mahal picking up the win when Elias pins Seth Rollins would drift away at approximately 17 minutes. Tony, your thoughts on how we got off to start the show this week?
I mean, it was as cliche as you can get in terms of an opening. But, I mean, you know, it's Elias, so it was enjoyable. It led to a match that you saw coming. And the match itself was pretty boring. I mean, I just, if these are supposed to be small samples that will lead to anticipation for the matches that are coming up, then I want them to know that they didn't do their job tonight with regards to gender and Reigns, because I believe 80% of their interactions were rest holds, and the other 20 was just sloppy.
Andrew?
Yeah, Tony has a good point there, because it was nothing surprising. It was a lot of Singh brother interference, and Elias and Jinder looked kind of exhausted and a little surprised afterwards. So it's kind of, it kind of doesn't do them a lot of favors. I think the funniest part to the match, which it wasn't supposed to be funny most likely, but the ref's reaction to Seth bringing in the chair, which I'm assuming that's going to play into some kind of angle at some point, because suddenly he's got like this love affair with the chair. But he slides it in, and then Elias catches him and plants him with a DDT. And just the way the referee reacted was just, it was like Obi-Wan Kenobi to Anakin. And he's just like, why? Why? You were supposed to be the chosen one. You brought this chair in, and he rammed your head in there. Why? And then he like tries to slide it out of the ring while admonishing Seth Rollins, who's unconscious. So it was like, I don't know if that was supposed to be funny, but I chuckled.
I don't get the Star Wars reference.
It's fine. The other five people listening will.
Fair enough. I'm going to agree with Tony in that the interactions between Jinder and Roman were unspectacular, but frankly, if you have high expectations from that match, you're probably the only person in God's green creation that does. I was actually more entertained by the interaction between Elias and Rollins, and I also wanted to talk about that finish there where we saw, as Andrew just mentioned, Seth tried to bring a chair into the ring and got caught with a DDT on the chair, and then we saw drift away immediately thereafter here. We were having a conversation about this over on the Chairshot forum on Facebook, the Chairshot Wrestling Group, and Warren and I were discussing it, and we were talking about the fact that he thought that drift away there was overkill, whereas I said that I think it makes sense in the context of Elias's character being able to deliver extra damage to who will be his Money in the Bank opponent. Andrew, where do you fall on this argument?
If Elias was a face, it looks like overkill because the guy was mostly knocked out, kind of as Seth was selling, but it's wrestling. People kick out of finishers, they kick out of garbage trucks and ambulance crashes, so why not just hit your finisher just to put the nail in the coffin, so to speak? Like, it's hard to call anything overkill nowadays.
Tony?
Whatever. No, I'm kidding. No, there was no overkill. I mean, I think it made perfect sense, and I think calling it overkill is just complaining simply to complain. I didn't see any issue with it. It wasn't just to get a win, it was to make a statement, so why not?
That's kind of where I came from, in that it seemed like he was trying to make an extra additional statement to Seth Rollins of, yeah, I have you down already, but I'm going to drive home the point with my finishing move to let you know that come Money in the Bank, I'm taking your title. Curt Hawkins is in the ring next. He sits at 0 and 199 because, of course, he does. Goldberg numbers. And has a proverbial crap ton of tacos at ringside. I believe those tacos construe a Braun Strowman's lunch. Anywho, he promises that if he wins his match tonight against local jobber James Harden, hook, everybody in the arena gets a free taco. The match itself sees James Harden pick up a win by disqualification thanks to the arrival and end of days by Baron Corbin. Tony, I know you've said many times on the show you are not a fan of Baron Corbin. Do you think that with what we see him involved with a little bit later on in the show, as well as his involvement in this match here, that maybe they're starting to come back around on Corbin to where they feel like he might have potential going into the future?
I think everything that they did with Baron Corbin tonight was stupid and asinine. It's going against everything that we've learned about his character as a lone wolf. It doesn't make sense that Stephanie McMahon would care about him as a person, let alone a wrestler. It's not the right person for the right role. And then who the fuck's a constable? And how is that better than a baron? I think, I'm not from the UK, but I'm pretty sure it's not nearly as cool as being a baron. He has no redeemable qualities for me. I don't like him in the ring. I don't like him out of the ring. I don't like him on Twitter. I'm bothered that we're going to have to see more of him. We're going to see him interject himself into matches. Like, why does he give a shit about a woman's match? Why does he care about admonishing a referee? You know, if the ultimate goal here is to have another thorn in Kurt Angle's side via Stephanie McMahon, I'm just not interested. I mean, it's one thing to have an authority figure storyline that they try to do with Reigns and then stop. It's another thing to have an authority figure versus Stephanie McMahon. That's tiresome, and I'm not interested.
He doesn't like him on a boat. He doesn't like him on a goat. Andrew?
He doesn't like him in a box. He doesn't like him on a fox. But still.
No green eggs.
I don't know.
Green eggs and ham. I am.
Correct. So, I'm kind of in Tony's boat and, you know, Greg DeMarco's boat, where Baron Corbin does nothing for me. I just kind of cringe when he's on the television. But I will say that it was at least somewhat clever, because you don't see the heels do that very often, where they purposely go into a match and cost a face, which I'm guessing Curt Hawkins is a face. I don't know. I guess he's supposed to be the sympathetic face since he loses all the time. But, you know, you don't normally see them go in purposely causing the DQ victory for the opponent. So that was different, at least. I'll give him some credit there. But, yeah, like Tony was saying, with the idea that he now had to hitch his wagon to Stephanie or vice versa, and now he's patrolling the locker rooms like, you know, the constable that he is, and making little judgments and, you know, mentions of things here or there. I don't know. Maybe he's supposed to be the next big rivalry for Reigns after he dispatches of Jinder, and then we get more television that nobody really wants to see.
On a related note, how do you even spell constable? Tony? I feel like this would be your area of expertise.
S-E-A-B-L-E. Constable. That's it.
Okay, cool. Good to know for future reference in case I have to type this in a report down the road. Moving on. Ronda Rousey's on commentary for our next contest as non-title action sees Nia Jax facing Natalya Neidhart. A little surprised they did this match on the 2 weeks before Raw rather than the go-home Raw. Also, were you surprised by the fact that Nia didn't go after Ronda while they were checking on Natalya after the match? Andrew, I'll start with you.
Was I surprised from a typical wrestling perspective? Yes. But from the fact that I'm pretty sure they don't really want those two touching, because you can't have them... One looked even slightly vulnerable, since they're both supposed to be built up so strongly. In that respect, no. But Ronda's commentary is terrible. And the whole way that match played out was weird as hell. Like, Natalya getting injured on that stupid run over the back spot, and then Nia looking concerned, and suddenly doing the 180 from her, you know, goading heel kind of thing last week to now she's just concerned for her fellow wrestler, and apparently Ronda's really into getting over the fact that, you know, only her husband can call her ripe for the picking. So I don't know. Can I just erase those 10 minutes from history?
Tony, I want to ask you kind of about what Andrew just said there. We talked about the complete 180 for Nia last week on Raw, where she was bullying the enhancement talent that we saw her facing on the episode of Raw. And now this week she's acting concerned for a fellow wrestler after she sustained an injury, air quotes, on an audio podcast. Your thoughts on this, Tony?
Just when I thought I couldn't care any less. The whole flip-flopping of Nia is either they realize that it didn't work, so they're just reneging on it, or they want to create a character that has layers, one that, you know, is willing to destroy a jobber because they mean nothing, but still cares about someone like Natalya. It's just the whole segment was weird, like Andrew said, considering if you get a knee injury during the match, and it didn't look deliberate on Nia's part, then why would Ronda be upset? She's from the MMA world where this is minimal compared to certain injuries that she may have seen. I see zero reason for her to be mad or bothered by it, Natalya getting a knee injury, unless it was deliberate, such as Nia smashing her with steps or destroying her with a chair or anything like that. It happened during the match. It happened, period. And to see Ronda rush down to take care of her and then push Nia away, you know, as if she shouldn't be some concerned person. And then Nia just doing this weird touching of Ronda's head, like, but I want to care about her. Let me shove your head softly because that equates to excessive anger and now we need to fight. It was just, again, it's bad writing. It's writing at the lowest level that is rushed, not considered of last week or the week mess. I don't know. The whole thing was just like, okay, I guess that's where we're going. All right.
Backstage interview with Bobby Roode follows, noting the fact that he had to pull out all the tricks in his trade in order to be able to take down Braun Strowman, stating that he's never faced anyone like him before. Yeah, not going to do it. We had this conversation in our Facebook chat. Not worth bringing to the show. Moving on. Strowman versus Roode is next. I want to talk about the finish, where Roode attempts to outsmart Strowman by putting a ladder in the path of the rush around the ring and knock you ass over tea kettle into the barricade. Strowman proceeds to have the counter for that by basically Braun smashing his way through the ladder, sending Roode back into the ring, and hitting the power slam for the finish anyway. Time of the fall, less than 5 minutes. Congratulations, Bobby. You'd have been better off in Impact Wrestling. Tony, your thoughts on Strowman versus Roode, as well as the, I guess we'll go with the creativity-ish of the finishing spot.
Well, I don't think anyone would have been better off at Impact Wrestling. But with regards to this, I think it firmly establishes the role that Bobby Roode has, and that is a shallow attempt at a comedic wrestler. I'm not saying he's incapable. I'm saying the WWE is incapable. This was really just to show us something we already know. This is equivalent to Braun flipping over yet another vehicle or destroying some random thing, you know. Cool visual, you know, especially with him screaming before he drops his fist into the ladder. But it ultimately means zero because the entire point of the ladder match that he's going to be in requires him to climb a ladder to reach a briefcase. So what really did this? I'm not upset about it. It's just like, all right, well, okay, next segment.
Andrew?
Yeah, everything Tony said. And the last point that he brought up was, I don't know, I guess it was just to have a really stupid and somewhat amusing thread that went through commentary for most of the rest of the day, where somebody always said, oh yeah, Braun's going to do fine, look what he did in his match. And then somebody else goes, but he broke a ladder that has nothing to do with climbing it to get a briefcase. And it's like, oh, awkward silence, derp, derp, derp. It's like, I don't know. It was kind of cool, but it was Braun. How many more things can he break, and how many more things can he throw people into and still get a pop? Like, it's really, really, really getting redundant. It's like the power hitter in baseball that he hits home runs all the time, but when it matters, he strikes out. Because how many times has Braun tried to get that championship and failed? So, sure, it's fun for times, but I don't know. I'm kind of over him already.
I've been kind of saying that for a while now, especially with the whole one-dimensional destroy everything character that they've been kind of booking Strowman with. Not to mention, I have no interest in seeing him having the briefcase anyway. I don't think that he's somebody that needs this briefcase in order to be able to get a title run down the line, assuming they decide to put the belt on him. Kevin Owens is interviewed backstage talking about the fact that Braun is big, Bobby Roode still has a robe, and the sky is blue. He then says that he will take out Finn Balor and everyone in his club, saying that he'll go on to win Money in the Bank and prove to everyone that Balor is nothing more than an Irish myth. You know, do you guys just want to go right into the main event here, since we did Owens' promo right here?
Might as well.
Balor doesn't have a retort later on in the show. So our main event for the evening is the aforementioned Finn Balor and Kevin Owens match here. Cole calls it the first time on Raw. I'm not sure that's accurate. I'm pretty sure they've probably met on Raw before, but it's Cole. What do you expect? The match itself goes Hold on, let me get the match time here. Had this written down, I have to find it. The match itself goes 18 and a half minutes. Balor picks up the win by disqualification when Owens gets, as mentioned, DQ'd for excessively stomping in the corner and not heeding the referee. 5 count. Andrew, what were your thoughts on this week's main event? How do you think it compares to the last of the main events that we've seen over the last month or so in the build towards Money in the Bank?
How does it compare? About on par, which isn't saying much. There was a lot of random rest holds, lots of headlocks, lots of just on the ground waiting for stuff to happen, be it a commercial break or not. And if you go 18 minutes, why in the blue hell would you stomp somebody in a tree of woe to the point of getting disqualified? You know, you've already gone that far. You think you'd want a real finish instead of this bullshit DQ finish where it then... The nice part about it, I guess, was the aftermath where there was the callback to Kevin Owens having issues with heights, where we remember that from the Hell in a Cell match with Shane McMahon, and that gave Finn the chance to kind of take the advantage and land a double foot stomp from the top of the ladder, basically, and then close the show looking cool. But it's just, what the hell was the point of that? Like, really, like, the match was mediocre at best. It was subpar for what the two could actually pull off. The ending made no sense. You were supposed to, I guess, kind of make it look like Kevin had the advantage because he sort of cheated and hit a big frog splash and was going to do a cool thing, and then his fear of heights got the best of him and whatever. I don't know. I thought the ending made no real sense when it all came back to it, but I appreciated the callback.
Tony?
don't give me a main event with the time that you gave it and then end it in a DQ where it's equivalent to falling on a pile of cotton balls. I mean, we've seen Seth Rollins get DDT'd into a chair on the same exact episode. And we're supposed to believe that, you know, maybe this ref is more sensitive towards the rules, but a few stomps in the corner is just way too much for us to handle in order to let the match continue. It's just that's the limit, you guys. That's where we say no. That's where we stop this tomfoolery and chicanery and just say, you know what, rules are rules are rules, man. Can't be doing that. For the main event of the band, though, if you're going to, the question that immediately comes to mind is why? Why did you do this? And the answer is to make sure that both are strong. And that's a stupid answer because no one is hurt by a loss here at all, especially these two. And I do have to agree with Andrew with regards to the match itself, where, like, it just was kind of there. You know, we had a fake injury with Kevin Owens in the beginning of the match. We had a fake injury with Alexa Bliss. We had a fake injury in the beginning of the episode of Raw. And then we had Natalya get hurt. And I was like, wow, you guys just, you picked from the shallow pool of cliche wrestling and just went for it, all in. Let's get a DQ ending at a main event. Let's make sure that it's stupid. Let's pretend to be injured at three wrestlers. Let's do an injury angle with another wrestler. Let's give a role that we've never fucking heard of to a mediocre wrestler that no one cares about. Yeah, they were spot on tonight.
Getting back to where we were in the show before we jumped ahead to the main event, Natalya's backstage, Ronda Rousey's checking on her. Apparently, Nia still wants to check on her. Ronda and Nia have words, and apparently they get into such a little bitch fest between each other that Natalya's had enough and walks off to go talk to Two Paws. Silence is golden. All right, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
In-ring interview with Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt. Matt ends up asking Renee Young if she's woken. She states that, yeah, yep, as unconvincingly as possible. Hardy, though, seems to buy it, leading in a welcome standing ovation. We then go right into the Battle Royal for the number one contendership to the tag team titles here. You guys' thoughts on the in-ring promo for Matt and Bray Wyatt tonight? Tony, we'll start with you.
Remember when Bray Wyatt would do those long promos that meant a lot without saying anything? I always felt like there was more to these promos that people really understood. Every promo that he had really did have a message to it that pertained to the feud he was in. Even if it sounded repetitive or kind of verbose or anything like that, it did make sense, and I always applauded and appreciated it to the point where I would type out word for word what he said so that people could see there is some weight in there. There's something there to be learned, and you really don't have to pull hard. You just can't be a dunce. I mean, if you have a modicum of intelligence, then you could see the extended metaphor that he's trying to portray. I bring this up only because tonight was the epitome of saying so much without saying anything. I mean, if we're ever going to complain about that from the few years that we've seen Bray Wyatt be a character, then tonight is the night. He didn't say anything. He didn't say a damn thing other than a couple of sentences strung together that would belong more on a T-shirt than in a promo. Not to say that it was bad. It's just there's no weight in that. And what that means is that there's no weight in this program. And what that means is that no one is going to care who they face. We're building up the B team, which is great. It's fine. I'm okay with it, and I enjoy it. But the match itself is a telling story as to how much we're supposed to care about this anyway. We took a really long stretch of what we already knew was going to happen, which was the B team facing them, and turned it into a battle royal, which is the epitome of we don't care. Put everybody in a battle royal and then just go from there. This match was hardly a match. There was not much to it. The only thing you could say actually had some weight to it would be the fact that Dolph Ziggler almost got eliminated like 8 times before finally getting dropkicked. I don't know. What is this going to piss off Drew? Or are they already going to split up? I don't know. Other than that, it was just, all right, let me just wait till the end. I mean, how do you even report this? I sat there just waiting till it mattered for me to say type something.
Andrew?
Yeah, that was really well put, Tony, because I don't know, like, I think Tony really hit the nail on the head when he's just like, there's no weight, because there's no heat. There's no story. Like, Bray and Matt both cut their best promos when there's some kind of storyline to kind of root into the metaphor or somebody for them to actually verbally spar back and forth with. And we have none of that. Like, we had a battle royal just to see who they'd face. So it's just place somebody in their way for defense number, what is it, 2 now technically? But regardless, this is worthless. And you had them cut a promo about nothing because there's nothing going on, which if anything, it might have hurt their characters more than helped, because between Renee's apathy and disingenuous, yeah, I'm woken, to they're just ridiculously over-the-top reactions to things that didn't, you know, really warrant that kind of reaction. I don't know. That whole thing just was weird. And then eliminating Dolph first, that was awkward. The fact that Rhino and Slater were, like, the last one standing next to the B team, and then there was a little miscommunication moment there. I don't know. I don't know what the hell they're doing with their tag team division, and I don't like it because I don't really see any merit to it.
The Battle Royal follows, where we do see the B team pick up the win here. Things of note, McIntyre and Ziggler out first. I saw a lot of people bitching about this. I actually think it kind of makes sense to an extent. There's no reason to waste them getting their shot at the tag team titles in a garbage situation like this. Plus, You had all of these people focusing on getting Ziggler out anyway. The main thing that I wanted to discuss as well was the fact that it was Slater that accidentally knocked Rhino off of the apron in order to give the B team the win. A, do you think we see McIntyre and Ziggler get a run with these tag team titles before they are separated? B, do you think we see Slater and Rhino split anytime soon? Andrew, I start with you.
The Slater and Rhino split, I think, has kind of been brewing because they've had nothing going on, and they went from Slater's Rhino trying to train him to be tougher and be a man or whatever the heck that was, to dropping that story like a bad habit, and then they disappeared for a few weeks and sort of kind of came back, and they've been a comedy act, but you've got Breezango, you've got the Ascension, who are already comedy acts within themselves, and AOP, I guess, has to return to TV eventually, so if that's the angle they're going for and AOP returns to take the belt off, then technically Ziggler and McIntyre are the only ones that look like they could even challenge from a, physical stature kind of perspective. So, sure, Ziggler and McIntyre will eventually get the belts, probably after AOP reinserts themselves into the tag team division. And I hope Slater and Rhino break up because they've done nothing anyway. You might as well break them up and then let Rhino go back to doing whatever the hell he was doing beforehand and have Slater get some kind of mid-card singles push, maybe. Possibly. Or job. But just be by himself and on TV more often.
Tony?
Yes? Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Just answer the goddamn question.
I would assume that having Drew and Dolph come up the way they did, that they're going to win the titles at least once, but I don't really care to see it. I don't want to rush Drew's push, but at the same time, why wait? You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those weird moments of limbo where you're like, everything inside of you as a wrestling fan says, no, don't rush it, he still needs this or he still needs that. But then there's the logical standpoint of like, why the fuck not? I mean, he's pretty hot right now. So I think if this is going to fast forward to the eventual split up of these two, then I'm all for it, especially if I get to see Dolph get his face kicked in, because that's always enjoyable. With regards to Heath and Rhino, I mean, I don't know if they'd be doing any worse split up than they are now together, so it doesn't really matter to me. They're good. They're good for comedy segments, but yeah, there's no energy there anymore. I mean, they're great. They're great. I don't want to say they're great people. I don't fucking know, but they're great from what we see on screen. But at the same time, they're also not a necessity. I mean, realistically, the way that they've been writing over the past few years, not even months, I'd say that no one's a real necessity. I mean, we could watch a show without Roman Reigns, and it could be one of the best ones. That's probably an issue, considering he's the face of the show.
I feel like McIntyre would be a much better person for that top spot as the main Raw heel, rather than a guy like Mahal that is currently placed into it. And I think they realize that, and especially with the way the fans have been reacting to McIntyre ever since his re-debut on the main roster. I kind of hope Tony's correct in that this is kind of a fast-forwarding for McIntyre and Ziggler as a tag team, because there's nothing there outside of the Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels dynamic between it. And while Nash was the breakout star of the Michaels and Nash pairing immediately, you saw more long-term success for Michaels. I don't think the same works for Ziggler and McIntyre here. I think McIntyre will be the breakout star immediately and will have more sustained success than Ziggler will, especially when it comes to the main event picture inside of the WWE. I'm still stuck watching these old school episodes of Raw. That's kind of why I tied this all together. Bobby Lashley and Sami Zayn. Oh, boy. Tony, by all means, have at it, because I don't know how to accurately describe this.
Okay, so when you're watching a porno and you press play, and there's a really, really strong attempt at storyline, really, really basic usually. Like a Girl Scout's trying to sell cookies and then the next thing you know, a dick's in her mouth. But there's that small segment where you're like watching someone who doesn't act try to act. And you and there's one other person in that scene where you're like, you know what, they kinda got some chops. I mean, this is you're making me fully invested in this eventual sex scene. But this other person is just really, really bad. Like, two emotions bad. And it just, it kind of takes you out of the moment to where you're like, you know what? No, pause, next page, Pornhub, thanks. Tonight was somewhat equivalent, where Sami Zayn was the good actor with the large penis, and Bobby Lashley was the big-titted chick that just did not get over. I feel bad because Lashley is imposing. He's a figure that is domineering, and he just, I mean, the dude's Bobby Lashley, you know? And of all the things that Sami Zayn has said over the past few weeks, the one thing that pisses off Bobby Lashley is maybe you weren't in the army. And for whatever reason, that just boils this American boy's blood to the point where he turns from smile to scowl. And that's the extent of his anger. I don't know why we're supposed to care about him other than he's in the army, which, I mean, you know, considering the state of America in 2018, we're not all that patriotic anymore. Yeah, they can chant USA all they want, but I would venture to say a majority of America isn't so gung-ho. I mean, the best thing is that they did it in Texas, so that helped a little bit, and the crowd wasn't too bad. But realistically speaking, there's a similar to what we said earlier, there's no heat here, even though they're trying really hard to create some. But I don't know who made this storyline up. I don't know who was given the pen and paper on this one, because they had so many options here, and they went this route. I mean, just consider that for a moment. You have Bobby Lashley, who is a blank slate to a majority of wrestling fans. That is something you have to color in. That's something that you have to build. And you have Sami Zayn, an able performer who could cut a promo and put emotion in it and create something cool. And you have so many options and so many different things to create. And what you do is you say Sami Zayn had vertigo and is upset about it, and Bobby Lashley has 3 sisters. That's what you gave us to work with.
First of all, I got to give it up to Tony for somehow managing to make a Bobby Lashley promo sound like somebody getting their dick sucked and make it relevant. Bravo, Tony. Well played, sir. Andrew,
thanks,
to steal an old line from Shawn Michaels, follow that.
I mean, I could follow that just simply by bringing a thread back from the beginning of the show and being like, Tony, you remember when you said you don't think anybody would be better off in Impact? And...
All right, well played, Andrew. Well played.
Thank you. But aside from that, Tony's completely right, so we can just go to the next thing.
I will say this much. I do think that Lashley was worlds more entertaining in TNA than Impact Wrestling than he's ever been at all in his WWE return. And I would make the argument at this point right now with the creative that he's undergoing that Sami Zayn may be better off in Impact Wrestling right now than he is on Monday Night Raw as well.
Fair enough.
Moving on. Jinder Mahal interview backstage. Roman Reigns interview backstage. The two mesh together in kind of a super interview. Actually, I'm okay with that. I think it's cool. It's a nice change of pace from your standard interview segment. Then brawling backstage. Not so interested. The match itself at Money in the Bank is probably going to suck. It's Jinder. What do you expect? Moving on. Six-woman tag team action right now as Sasha Banks, Ember Moon, and Alexa Bliss... Wait, Bayley? Wait, what? Take on the Riot Squad. Okay, so an explanation is in order here. Originally, the tag team partner is Alexa Bliss, who's apparently still wearing a t-shirt while she's wrestling, making me of the opinion that she may have had her implants worked on again. Anywho, Alexa gets injured, air quotes on an audio podcast, and makes her way to the back. The Riot Squad proceeds to dominate most of the rest of the action there. I almost corrected myself and said Absolution, then realized which one I was talking about. until Bayley comes down to make the save for Sasha Banks, because of course she fucking does, leading to a Bayley to belly on Sarah Logan for the pinfall at about 11 minutes. That is until Baron Corbin yells at Kurt Angle backstage, and then Kurt Angle approaches Bayley, Sasha, and Ember and lets them know that the decision has been reversed and that the Riot Squad win by disqualification. All right, Tony, you're up.
Okay. Sasha's hair looks great. And, whenever her hair looks good, she looks, like, millions of times better. Because sometimes that wig, you know, I just don't think she has a black friend. And I really think that she should get one. Because Bayley cannot help her. Yeah, the match is just kind of there. Sarah Logan is just weird to me. Liv is trying really hard. Ruby's actually pretty good considering, you know, our disdain for her physical appearance. Ember is great too. Alexa is Alexa. But it's just, I mean, okay. It's one thing to be like Kurt Angle backstage said, Bayley, go on, get out there. It's another thing to see what happened tonight just happened. In whose mind? I mean, what was Bayley thinking backstage? Like, let's just keep it kayfabe for a minute. What is she saying? Fuck it. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to help my friend. Boom. Tag me in. Bayley to Bayley, whatever, and then pin. And who thought that that was just going to fly? And who just thought it was going to be okay? Of course someone's going to say something. I mean, granted, I didn't think it was going to be the new constable of Monday Night Raw. But it was just one of those things where it's like, that doesn't make sense. Come on. And then for the girls to get all huffy and puffy about it, Sasha Banks is like, wow, you know what? You're a real friend. You're a true homie. Good looking out, man. And then Kurt's like, the win doesn't count. And all of a sudden, Sasha just flips and looks Bayley up and down like, you bitch, you fucked it all up. How did we go from one emotion to the other so quickly with no, like, I mean, first of all, you're at a point right now where no one gives a shit about Bayley and Sasha. No one. No one cares anymore. Ember just wanted to get crunk. She was just trying to celebrate this quasi-win. Like, fuck it, let's go. I can take these contacts out and get turned. But no, couldn't do it. Like, the whole thing was just messy. It felt like someone just ran out of an idea and said, let's just try this. Because, you know what? Why not?
It is an absolute joy to be a part of this show with you every week.
Tony, real quick. Did you just describe what happened tonight between Bayley and Sasha, or did you describe what happened between LeBron and JR in the NBA Finals? I'm not sure.
I mean, honestly, it's interchangeable at this point. We did have a James Harden on TV tonight, so.
And we had I thought we were tied, so. I don't know the rules. Let's just add people to this match. It's fun.
I will say I'm pretty sure J.R. Smith has a black friend, though.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a nice way to bring that one full circle.
Andrew, do you have anything to add on Tony's tirade?
The fact that he wasn't, like, super, super sweet on the fact that Sasha was in it and seemed to actually be kind of critical and a little mean was nice to hear. So I've got nothing.
We also get a clip of Baron Corbin bitching out the referee from the match backstage as well, because apparently zebra lives don't matter. And since we've already discussed the main event on the evening, that brings us to an end, unless you guys want to talk about Big Show and the Special Olympics.
Well, you know, I hear that, I mean, I'm pretty sure that was Nicholas's father that they had in the backstage that Corbin was yelling at, right?
Yes, John Cohn.
Yeah, I think Nicholas is coming back soon.
Spoilers, you heard it here first on the reaction.
I mean, well, it is almost summertime, so maybe he's done with fourth grade.
Damn it, Andrew. That one got me. Well played, sir.
Hey, you're welcome.
And that officially wraps up this episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's go ahead and get into our final reaction Tony, favorite match or moment this evening?
Oh, Sasha Banks' hair.
Assuming she gives it back to the horses, she got it from what she's done with it, okay. Andrew?
They're from little Indian girls across the country, okay?
Are we talking about, like, love? Are we talking about love here?
Oh, boy.
Man, that was
I feel this is going to go off a cliff somewhere. All right. Okay, deviate to the side. Take a step. Step away from the comments. Let's just continue with the moments. I'm going to say my favorite moment was Elias's song. That was good stuff. Harry, what was your favorite moment?
I actually kind of enjoyed the Tag Team Battle Royal because I thought they told a couple of pretty decent stories in there. Rhino, when he was focused, was dominant. Rhino, when he was not focused, wasn't. There's a story to be told with Rhino still here that actually kind of has me interested in the character. And if you have me interested in Rhino in 2018, then you're doing something okay in that regard. I am curious to see where they're going to go with the Revival because as of right now, they have both Jack and Shit for them. And then every other tag team in that match is more or less just fodder. Greg Watry moment of the week, Tony.
Everything to do with Baron Corbin. I just don't know who decided that this was smart. Probably didn't decide it was smart. They probably just said, fuck it. But yeah, I had zero interest. And it makes no sense.
Andrew? Greg Watry.
Only my husband can call me right for the picking in stereo.
So nice.
I'm going to go with it wasn't nice.
Just, I didn't have to say it twice.
I'm sorry. Come again?
Back to your porno moment. And he was talking about the Bobby Lashley segment. Ah, so many layers in this podcast.
This may be the first episode of the reaction to end up on Brassers.
Oh, that's
oh, God.
Speaking... Damn it, Tony. Speaking of Brazzers, have you guys seen the Photoshop picture with the Brazzers logo for Stephanie for Undercover Boss? Pretty hysterical. I have to share that in the group chat.
Yeah, you should share that one.
I'm going to give my Greg Watry moment of the week to the Bobby Lashley, Sami Zayn segment. It's like Tony said, Sami's trying, but he's got nothing to work with here. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
5.
Andrew?
4.5.
I'm with Tony at a 5, which after last week is a significant step up to me, because I gave it a 2 last week. What up, Jimmy C?
2, sweet.
In actuality, I would have given it a 3, but the 2 averaged everything out to a 3, so it worked. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
No one really stood out. I'll give it to Kevin Owens because I like when he shouts in the middle of the ring during a match.
Andrew?
I'll give it to David Otunga because he's not Booker T.
Or the coach. How
exactly.
Is it that in one episode of commentary, David Otunga proved why he should have this job on a regular basis more so than Coach should at this point? I used to love Coach when I was younger. I thought he was an excellent commentator for what he was. Otunga's work tonight put him to shame.
To be fair, we were praising Coach the first like week or two he was back also, and then somehow he fell off a cliff, and I don't know who gave him that direction, but... Who knows?
You there. Fall off the cliff. It was Vince. Vince is like, you clearly care too much about this product.
You're fired.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah. I'm going to give my MVP tonight to the Las Vegas Golden Knights for sucking enough that people might have actually watched Raw.
That's a fair enough point. It was kind of a blowout.
In all sincerity, I'm going to give my MVP for the evening to Sami Zayn for trying to carry that train wreck of a Bobby Lashley segment. That's going to officially wrap it up for us. So for the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, wait for me to fuck that up.
Good job.
And the third man, Andrew Ballas. I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Tony, send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
Have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. for the Money in the Bank Prediction Special Edition of the Raw Reaction with Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Ballas. Find us online at www.thechairshot.com.